Welcome to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show, where faith and liberty meet. Our host is Dave Garrison from Ohio Christian University, a longtime Fortune 100 company top executive and a former U.S. congressional candidate from Texas. Our goal for the Faith and Liberty Talk Show is to give you an opportunity to listen to interviews and discussions with significant authorities and experts on subjects related to Christians engaging in the civil and political arena. The mission of the show is to give you real information and not sound bites that you can really use. We have a website for the show, faithandliberty.org. At this website, you can obtain more information about the show, our guests, subscribe to our newsletter, and become a friend of the show, and like us on our Faith and Liberty Facebook page. You can also access all of our previous shows. Please keep in mind that the Faith and Liberty Talk Show exists only with the generosity and support of our listeners. If our show is of value to you, we would appreciate you visiting our website, faithandliberty.org, and donating to the show. Now, let's begin today's show. Thank you for joining us.
We're at the 20th Annual National Conference on Christian Apologetics, 2013, here in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the First Baptist Church in Indian Hills. There are over 2,200 people in attendance. There are nationally renowned speakers on every subject from science to economics to faith to atheism, Islam, politics. I think you will enjoy hearing from many of these speakers today and tomorrow as we interview them live here at the conference. Thank you for joining us today. We have with us Dr. Gary Habermas. He's the Distinguished Research Professor and Chair of the Department of Philosophy and Theology at Liberty University. He's published 36 books, 18 on the subject of Jesus' resurrection. He has also published more than 60 chapters or articles in other books, plus more than 100 articles in journals and other periodicals. During the past 10 years or so, he has been a visiting or adjunct professor, teaching dozens of courses at 15 different graduate schools and seminaries in the U.S. and abroad. And I think you were highlighted by Lee Strobel in his Case for Christ.
Case for Christ and Case for Easter. It's the same article.
Focus on the family. You did a thing with Lee and Josh and Frank Turek.
Worldview.
Yes. I have played that so many times for people. I played the whole thing at the university for students. And it's been a real meaningful thing.
I don't know. You should have seen how they taped that. I mean, there were like 12 of us side by side by side on the stage. You don't know, have any idea how we could keep, I think we passed the microphone up and down. It was so,
to do a radio interview that way?
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Before we get into the subjects that you're speaking at here at the conference, I'd like to ask you, as I've been asking all of the speakers here at the conference, what do you think is the most pressing issue in America right now?
Any kind, or do you
of
mean
any
religious?
Kind. Like Josh McDowell said he thought was internet pornography.
Yeah, I've heard him say that. I don't know. I would probably choose either something ethical, like a pro-life issue in the larger context, not necessarily anti-abortion, but I mean the larger pro-life, or the serious move away from Christianity. I would be tempted to say that's number one, the move against Christianity. But then, of course, you're going to get people who say when people come down on Christians, Christianity gets stronger. So that's not a weakness. That's a strength. I don't know. But I think I would go with the weakening Christian fiber of this nation.
And similar to what's kind of happened in Western Europe, or do you think it has a different character?
I think it has a different character. I've got to be in Western Europe in 2 days. I think it's different because many of those countries have state religions. And I remember being in England years ago, and I said to them, you can do that in school? You can talk about Christianity? They'd say, don't forget, our government's a little different than yours. Unless they change our constitution, we can't get Christianity out. So, yes, it's Anglican Church is the state church. Now, just recently, I've heard of a country or two that's moved to de-Christianize, you know, the Lutheran Church or whatever. So I think that that flavor of having religion there at least gets religion on the page where, so I think that means, I'm just guessing, boy, this is so far from anything I research or do. I just think it means that maybe we're moving faster They're ahead of us, but I think we're moving faster.
And I think the internet has a lot to do with it. I mean, just looking at the exhibitions tables, and there's so many organizations doing so many different things and so many groups on the internet. You can do podcasts, radio broadcasts, all sorts of the stuff.
But apologetics is
really growing.
Apologetics, yes. I think that's one of the pluses to come out of this. Christians are defending their faith. And I can tell you from studying the other religions, from studying the world philosophies, a lot of people won't play the apologetics game at all. Those who do usually play the negative apologetics game. You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. Virtually nobody does what Christianity does and says, here's evidences that we're right. In other words, we will do negative apologetics and we'll criticize other groups, but we emphasize positive apologetics more than anyone. And if that multiplies by this and more people hear the gospel, I think that's the positive, the upside of what we just described.
Well, Lee Strobel writes a lot about you and the impact that you had on him. Do you concur with everything he says so wonderfully about you?
I don't even know what he says, except that we're good buddies, and I, you know, threatened to break his neck once in a while. You know, I say that because when we first met, Mark Middleburg, Lee and I, when we first met face to face, they met us in Chicago when I brought my hockey team from Liberty University up to Chicago to play in a tournament. So it was in a hockey context. Hence Lee's comment that Gary looks more like a nightclub bouncer, barroom bouncer than an ivory tower intellectual. See, so I got to play the role. I might as well, you know, crush him or something. That's him.
Well, one of the messages that you're delivering here this week is 10 Reasons for the Fall of Atheism. Would you explain a few of those points that you're going to make?
Yeah, and this isn't my area. I've just been impressed recently. It's that positive, negative, apologetic thing I just mentioned. I've just been real impressed lately that a lot of evidences, and I don't say this lightly, I say this as somebody who's studied evidences his whole life and has generally rejected new things that Christians have come up with. I usually think Christians are off the wall and they've got to quit this and they got to quit this and they got to quit this. Stop it and do serious apologetics. Generally, you know, I'd hate to have to name those because I'd be stepping on toes, but a lot of what we call apologetics isn't good apologetics. But there are about 10 different areas, and I divide them into 4 for religion in general, 6 for Christianity in particular. So the first 4 would just say atheists are wrong and theism is right, and the other 6 would say what kind of theism is right. So that's kind of that idea of what I said. Christians can play both sides. They can play the critics game. We could debate, you know, where you're coming from and what your non-Christian sources are. But with Christianity, we've got some really positive things. And I think the point I'm going to be making this weekend, Lord willing, is that of the 6 evidences I'm using for Christianity, the topics may be old ones, like the resurrection or the Shroud of Turin. But the evidence for them is all in the last 25 years. So all 6 of these have become evidential topics only within 25 years. So we're using modern, mostly scientific data. And right now, I just think there is a huge upturn and strong evidence for religion in general, Christianity in particular.
But I know you are at Liberty University, and I'm at Ohio Christian University, and we have a particular Christian worldview that both universities represent. But there are a lot, I think, of Christians that believe that the state, particularly the big state schools, have just given up and saying we're not even going to send our children there because it's so vastly outside of the Christian faith. And we see 50-80% of so-called Christian kids going there and losing their faith, or at least that's how they say it.
Yeah, 60-92% describe their own experience that way. Yeah, and when you have skeptics, like sometimes called an atheist, sometimes called an agnostic, Michael Ruse, a philosopher of science at Florida State University, when he even says, in at least that I know of, one article and 2 blogs, he says that atheism, he tries to be real careful, but he says atheism can be a religion. can be treated like a religion. And I think to myself, again, he really tries to nuance that, but I think to myself, you know, maybe the reason they're so angry at us when we say just the words, intelligent design, whoa, they just blow up, right? You go, miracle, oh, it all blows up. Afterlife, oh, they, you know, they don't have room for any of this. I think it's because if you ask the question, how would a Christian respond if they said Jesus wasn't born of a virgin or the Bible is not the word of God? Some Christians would start crying. Some of them would run away. Some of them would curl up in a ball. Some of them would start doing apologetics, right? We've got the same kind of thing. But that would explain maybe why they're so angry. I think the naturalism, the philosophical grandparent of which atheism is a category, I think they're losing right now. I think they're losing big. And there's a number of folks who are still naturalists, but they have just recently published major books or articles saying atheistic evolution's already down. I remember an article in the New York Times, an op-ed piece years ago that said they don't know it in the universities yet, but naturalism's already dead. And the guy who I understand from a guy who knows him, they said he's not a Christian, but he said the two takers for the new throne that naturalism held, the two takers are Christianity and a kind of a new age kind of whatever. And here's what they both have in common. They're both open to praying. They're both open to worshiping. They're both open to numinous power. They're both open to mystical experiences. And so the guy in the article said, there's some pluses for both sides. But he said, you Christians have things that the new age, he didn't call them new agers, but he called them neural Buddhists, by the way. He said, because it was based on some new neurology, some really good evidence. He said, what you Christians need is since you have specific doctrines and the neural Buddhists just have general religion, you need to start defending your specific doctrines. So to me, that said, how do you know the atonement happened? How do you know resurrection? How do you know, virgin birth, inspiration? Go after your doctrines and tell us why your doctrines are true. Well, you know, personally, I would be pleased to have someone say, the floor is yours, talk to us, but you're going to give us evidence. Hey, I'm willing to do that. In fact, I tell my students, I this is impossible on two counts, but I wished I were both 30 and knew everything I knew now, because I wished I had another lifetime to give the Lord, because there are so many tools coming out right now. And that's why Liberty University has we have a PhD in theology and apologetics, and people are rushing. We've got almost 100 students in it, and we just started like 3 years ago. And it's pretty high caliber. I mean, if you want to read 3,000 pages for a class, you know, go for it. And we're trying to raise up a generation who will step into this gap, because we think naturalism's kind of on the run. In fact, maybe just something to think about. Maybe we're winning the battle, and that's why critics are legislating their answers in, because I don't think their answers are working evidence for evidence. I think they're losing. So if I can't keep my view of science in the public schools, I'll legislate my view into the schools.
Well, I know we're not exactly talking about politics, but when the Department of Education wants to bring in what's called gainful employment, meaning that people who graduate from our schools have to be able to pay back their school loan in a certain period of time, they get a job in their field in a certain period of time, or we lose our ability to get school loans for the students. That's another way they're trying to legislate that, because lo and behold, they've exempted state schools from that requirement. And that's what President Obama was talking, well, I guess 3 weeks ago now, about ranking the schools. That's what he was getting at.
I haven't even heard this.
Oh, yeah.
And state schools, why would they be exempt?
Because their lobby was able to get it exempt. There's one way to say it. The other reason is because they're partial. The Department of Education is partial. We had a whole bunch of college presidents go down to Washington and scream bloody murder. They tried it last summer, and lots of congressmen and senators went to the Department of Education and threw a fit about it. And then President Obama just mentioned it 3 or 4 weeks ago, that he wants to put that back in. But that's what they're headed at. And I can tell you all sorts of stories about student loans, but Anyway, back to what I see you shaking your...
Because I think debate should be in the ideas arena, not who shows up at the polls. And if the polls switch around and the other views get in, like in the state of Virginia, some rules were just passed about abortion clinics having to pass all the laws that they do in hospitals now. So a lot of the abortion clinics are closing down. Well, now they've sued, and that's coming up. The lawsuit's coming up. But see, when we win an election or in court, they're upset with us for the same reason we're upset with them. Don't try to legislate our views out, and then our views legislated out. I make no secret. I would like it to be a debate, and the best ideas win, not I'm going to do it by fiat and tell you what's going to be in there.
Well, when you don't have the evidence for your view,
there you go.
Then that's why they have to go another way.
That's exactly
but you're an
right.
artist with words. You've written more than 36 books, 18 of them, I believe, is on the resurrection. You're considered one of the nation's primary experts on that area. Frank Lutz, Dr. Frank Lutz, I don't know if you know who he is. You'll see him on Fox News at an election. He'll have a panel of people, and he's asking them questions. He wrote a book that's called Words That Work, I believe is what it is. We put a link up to it on our website.
I need to learn what those words are.
Yeah. Well, that's part of his point, is that conservatives and evangelicals, we are really bad at using words, and that we need to get a lot better. You know,
that's thoughtful.
And because the left or the liberal side, you know, pro-choice, affordable health care, those words, they're very, very, very careful. And I think a lot of times we're not. Now, you were also speaking here at the conference on the Shroud of Turin. And having heard that you wake up in the morning and have different percentages for whether you think it's Christ.
Yeah, how much sleep I got. Yeah.
So what?
I was kind of a joke, but I do. Mm-hmm. I do evaluate it differently because it is kind of fluctuating with the state of the evidence. You know, science by nature, your conclusions fluctuate with data. And new stuff's coming on the Shroud all the time. I saw a new article just last week. So new evaluations are coming out, and you have to proportion your view of the evidence, whatever it is.
Students will tell me, and I'll bet you hear the same things, that if it works, it must be true, versus if it's true, it must work. Because I think our generation was more in the latter.
And I don't think either one's true.
And what do you think is true?
I mean, a lot of what's true doesn't work. Sometimes it's not practical to be real honest in the workplace, right?
Well,
sometimes it's not practical to be honest if you're a salesman.
Well, I work for Halliburton, so you better be careful. You've gone from preaching to meddling.
Yeah, well, Saturday morning, I don't have enough. I work basically 11, 12-hour days.
Same
every
here.
Day, and I don't watch. I mean, if I were to turn my wife likes to watch the news during dinner, and we do that. But that's about, and I read the paper every day.
Well, my wife watches Fox News a lot, and that's who gives me my.
That, and she feeds you, right?
Right.
Well,
Dr. Habermas, thank you for spending your valuable time with us. And again, we appreciate your ministry. And we talked a little bit about Lee Strobel, but you've touched thousands, tens of thousands, probably millions of people around the globe with your writings and your messages. And we thank you for following God's will in your life.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show. We hope you are enjoying this week's show. After a short break to hear from our sponsor, Ohio Christian University, we will rejoin our host, Dave Garrison, and this week's guest.
Does it seem like today's culture is racing towards the edge of a cliff? Choosing an educational institution is like choosing a winning race car. Ohio Christian is a values-driven university, preparing servant leaders to engage their world. Graduates excel in leadership. Just ask our 5-time New York Times bestselling author, Dr. John Maxwell. If you're looking to get on course, come enter the race with us. We're now enrolling for the fall semester, so enroll today at www.ohiochristian.edu or call 1-877-7-OCU now.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show, where faith and liberty meet. Now, back to the discussion with our host, Dave Garrison, and this week's wonderful guest.
Dr. Land, we thank you so much for joining us today here at the National Christian Apologetics Conference, being sponsored by Southern Evangelical Seminary. and also Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. How did these come about? Because they've been going on for quite a while.
Well, they were started by Norm Geisler and Ross Rhodes when this SES was started 21 years ago, co-founded by Norm Geisler and by Ross Rhodes, who was then the pastor at Calvary Church here in Charlotte. They wanted to do this, and so they within a year they had started this conference, and it's the longest running conference that we have in the country that is continuously an annual conference on apologetics. And as you can see, it's grown like Topsy.
Well, isn't the attendance double from what it was last year?
Yes, we at least doubled. In fact, it wounded my soul, but we had to finally cut off registration last Monday because the fire marshal was telling us, you know, any more people and we're going to turn them away. And we didn't want people to pay their money and come and not be able to get in. So we had to cut off registration. But we're expecting with volunteers and speakers, 2,200 people here.
Well, that is fascinating. Last night we attended at your inauguration and the great talks and the charges that those wonderful men of God gave you and your long years in service to the church and as a pastor. And at one point you were listed as one of the top 25 evangelicals in America. I know we talked about that when you were on our show before. What do you think are the most pressing issues in America right now?
Well, I think the most pressing one is the answer to the question, who and what is a human being? We are faced with a very stark choice with enormous consequences between the sanctity of life ethic upon which our nation was based. The Declaration of Independence says all men are created equal, and they're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life. Now, that has led us to always have in our society a sanctity of life ethic, that we give reverence to human life. We respect all life, but we give reverence to human life. Well, the Darwinian Project says that human beings are not special. In fact, they actually dismiss what I believe and what you believe as speciesism, thinking more highly of your own species than you ought to think. That we are just merely the most sophisticated mammals who got to the top of the evolutionary chain by chance, and that we're there, but that doesn't make us any more valuable or any different than the rest of creation. And as Christians, we say, no, that's simply not true, that we are different in kind, not merely in degree, from the rest of creation. So there are some things that must never be done to a human being, and there are some respects that must always be given to human beings. That impinges on the question of abortion. You know, under what circumstances can you kill an unborn human being? It deals with the issue of euthanasia. It deals with the issue of human dignity. I remember back in the 1960s when I was an undergraduate, B.F. Skinner, who at that time was probably the most famous man in America. You know, now nobody knows who he is. But he was a behavioral psychologist and made the cover of Time and Newsweek. And, I mean, he was probably the most famous, along with Kinsey, probably the most famous man in America. And he wrote a book called Beyond Freedom and Dignity, saying that freedom and dignity were outmoded concepts that human beings could no longer afford. And the great Francis Schaeffer penned a response entitled Back to Freedom and Dignity,
right,
which he said, no, these are innate parts of being a human being.
What's your favorite book of all time?
Other than the Bible?
Other than the Bible. What's on your nightstand right now you're reading?
Well, I'm rereading The Great Gatsby right now, and I'm finding it to be a much better book than I thought it was when I was 25, when I read it the first time. And I'm also a book that is on, certainly would be on my top five, and that is Witness by Whitaker Chambers, which I read when I was in high school, and had as profound an impact on me as it did on Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan said that it changed his whole philosophy. Whitaker Chambers' book, Witness, and you know, the most powerful part of that book is the preface, in which he writes a letter to his grandchildren explaining to them why he feels compelled morally to choose what he fears will be the losing side in the debate between communism and non-communism. But his faith in God, his newfound faith in God, compels him to choose the non-communist path. It's a very moving book and a very powerful book, and it shows the innate evil in communism. And it's why, you know, I sometimes find students today are they look at me like incomprehendingly when I say, you know, I was prepared to die to keep America from being taken over by communism.
Speaking of your teaching, the person that spoke last night, Ergun Kanner, he seemed to imply that you were one tough professor. Do you concur with all he said?
No. Ergun, first of all, I get tougher every year, you know, in his memory. It's like, you know, I think it must be like what it was like to go back to a reunion of Confederate veterans, you know, 30 years after the war, where, you know, they talk about a South that never was, you know, where all the slaves loved their masters, you know, and everybody was hunky-dory. I mean, you know, Ergun, I get tougher every year in Ergun's mythological world. But I will say, you know, he did say last night that there's always one student in class who feels compelled to teach the teacher. Well, he was that student.
Oh, really?
And so I had to get Ergun to get an existential understanding that I knew more than he did at the time, and that's why I was the teacher and he was the student. So I was a little tougher on him than I was on some.
Well, every class has one of those, you know, and because I have a law degree, I love the Socratic method. And the Socratic method is just wonderful for those kinds of students because you get to ask
it
the
is.
Question.
But I did tell them, look, I said, you know, I am there to teach them, and almost all of my students were ministerial students, and what I always have in mind is the people they're going to pastor. And, you know, a degree from Criswell College was a license to practice on Baptist churches.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so I always had in mind those people that they were going to pastor, and I wanted them to be the best pastors they could be.
How important, and I know you need to move along, but how important do you feel apologetics is for today's modern culture? We'll call
I think it's
it.
Essential. It's for the Christian witness to be successful, it's absolutely essential.
And why more so than in the past?
Because we live in a post-Christian world. We live in a world where the basic presuppositions of the Christian faith, the basic presuppositions of the Christian worldview, are not the basic presuppositions of our culture. It used to be, I mean, the world I grew up in, I was a child in the 50s, and it began to change when I was a teenager in the 60s. And, you know, we've been through some changes. I mean, you think about, the 50s, and then we had the turbulent 60s, we had the feckless 70s, we had the Reagan 80s, the Clinton 90s, and then we had George W. Bush and Barack Obama. I mean, that's some neck-snapping changes without ever applying the brakes.
Right.
And so now we can't just assume that people have a worldview that we can appeal to, and thus saith the Lord. We have to approach America the way we would approach a mission culture, understanding the presuppositions and being able and willing to answer the honest questions. Apologetics really means loving people enough to give them honest answers, real honest answers to their honest questions.
Thank you so much for being here today. I could talk to you for a very long time, especially about politics, but that's not
the
day.
Well, let me tell you why I'm here at SES.
Yes, please
I'm here
do.
Because, first of all, I was very grateful that when I announced that I was going to retire from the ERLC in the Southern Baptist Convention that I had several job offers. I wasn't all that sure anybody wanted a 66-year-old guy. But I do believe that, you know, we're not general practitioners at SES. We're specialists. You know, the reason specialists are really good is they get really good at what they do because that's all they do. They're not general surgeons, but plastic surgeons. Actually, they have specialists. You know, they have people that primarily work on noses and other things. We are not general practitioners. Many of the seminaries, by their definition, have to be general practitioners. They teach all the different disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
We just do apologetics. That's all we do. And so if you want to be in a place where everything is focused on apologetics and where that's all we do and we're really good at it and we can help you to be really good at it, then you want to come to SES. Go to ses.edu, download our app, find out about our online education. In 3 years, everything we do is going to be available online.
Well, apologetics made me pay attention to the gospel. Josh McDowell's book, More Than a Carpenter, I read that, and then shortly after that, I had a college debate, and so I chose evidence that demands a verdict. And by using those two things, it was a powerful message for me that this faith has reason. It's not just the spiritual thing that's out there God gave us.
It takes a whole lot more faith to believe in Darwinian theory of evolutionary origins than it does to believe that there's an intelligent designer and that the intelligent designer has revealed himself to us in Scripture as the God of Scripture.
Well, Dr. Land, we thank you so much for all your service over these many years. You are one of the most accomplished, and I know you would say blessed, people by God because of all that he's done in your life. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being out there contending for the faith on the airwaves.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show. We hope you are enjoying this week's show. After a short break to hear from our sponsor, Ohio Christian University, we will rejoin our host, Dave Garrison, and this week's guest.
Ohio Christian University is one of the fastest growing universities in the nation, offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs fully online in the areas of business, psychology, chemical dependency counseling, nursing, and ministry. You can earn an accredited, relevant, and affordable online degree all from the comfort of your home. Now is the time to prepare for your future and earn your degree with Ohio Christian University. Call today at 855-OCU-GRAD or online at ocuonline.com.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show, where faith and liberty meet. Now, back to the discussion with our host, Dave Garrison, and this week's wonderful guest.
Dr. Norman Geisler is here at the National Christian Apologetics Conference, and we're so pleased to have one of the, what I call, fathers of apologetics. He personally means a lot to me because I read his book, Inerrancy, when I was struggling with a lot of the Christian theology. And he was at Dallas Seminary at that time and had written that book, and I had to talk to everybody about inerrancy. So it really meant a lot to me because I then realized the Bible was true, and that if we thought we had errors, then we had a domino theory, I believe is what you called it in that book. And so it gave me a holistic look at the Bible, and I appreciate that. Dr. Geisler has authored or co-authored over 80 books. Do you do anything but write, Dr. Geisler?
I read.
You read. You must read and write every day. He has taught theology, philosophy, and apologetics on the college or graduate level for over 50 years. So you must be 55?
At least.
Okay. He has served as a professor at some of the finest seminaries in the United States, including Trinity Evangelical Seminary. That is the Evangelical Free Seminary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas Seminary, Southern Evangelical Seminary, which is the one that's hosting, along with Rabbi Zacharias International Ministries, this conference. He now lends his talents to Veritas Evangelical Seminary in Marietta, California, as a distinguished professor of apologetics. Now, Dr. Geisler, in your years doing what you're doing, what would you say, observing the Christians throughout this nation and evangelicals, what would you say is the most pressing issue in America?
Well, the most pressing issue in America politically is we're losing our freedom. The most pressing issue in America theologically is the inerrancy of the Bible. The battle is still going on. It's been revived recently. The most pressing issue in terms of philosophy, pluralism, relativism, and naturalism. All views are true. There is no absolute truth, and miracles don't occur, so you can't believe the Bible. Those are the three issues.
Yeah, that is worrisome to a lot of Americans. And as we talk to Christians, you know, they list many of those things. They may, you know, the average Christian may use different words, but we're hearing that. The students that come to our university, Ohio Christian University, a lot of them are lost when it comes to many of those issues, even though they come from Christian homes. One of the questions I like to ask long-term educators is related to a lot of people think that the young are not looking for truth in America. They're all about themselves. What's been your observation?
Well, that's not true. That's true of a lot of young people. But behind all of that, they're still made in the image and likeness of God. They're still fallen creatures. They still need meaning in their life. They still need truth. They still need something ultimate that they can hang on to. So don't be deceived by superficial appearance of young people. You know, I used to teach at the Cornerstone Festival. It's a Christian rock festival. I meet out in the cornfields of Illinois. And I used to, you see these kind of people coming with purple hair and all sorts of things. But you sit down and teach a class, and like anyone else, they're interested in where did I come from, why I'm here, where am I going, and give me something I can hang on to.
And one of the things that we see is they're looking for something bigger than they are, and they're bombarded with information from so many points. The internet, so many of them are constantly on the internet, whether it's Facebook or some other social media. And in some ways, it's made them more shallow to me.
It's superficial.
Yeah, that's the superficialness.
It's impersonal, it's superficial, and they need something more.
One of the subjects you're speaking on here so well is Reasons to Believe, a discussion with Norm Geisler. And that's related to the fairly recent book of yours, Reasons for Belief, Easy to Understand Answers to 10 Essential Questions. Which of the questions do you think that people are asking the most that you're trying to answer?
Well, they're asking all of the major apologetics questions. Is there truth? Can I know it? Are there any absolutes? How do I get from here to there, wherever there is? Is there really a way? Is there a true religion? Can I understand it? Can it teach me how to live in this world and to be prepared for the next world? I was teaching a group of seventh graders once. All of them came from wealthy homes, but they went to a church that was fairly orthodox. It was liturgical, but fairly orthodox. And I was absolutely surprised. Every question those seventh graders asked me had to do with hell or something related to it. Is there a hell? Is it real? Who goes there? How can I avoid it? You know, I couldn't believe that this was their open house question, and I was just there to answer whatever they were going to ask. And I figured it'd be about relationships and sex and a bunch of other stuff. That was about heaven and hell, and are they real?
Well, that's interesting, because I was at a small conference in Spring, Texas, and Dwight Pentecost, who I know you know, was down at this, and he was speaking primarily to the men, but there were a lot of young guys, and that's where those guys, those young men were coming from.
Yeah.
I mean, there were high school and young college men that were at this conference, and he does an excellent job, as you do, in answering some of those questions. The other subject you have here at the conference is theistic evolution. It's scientific and biblical challenge to evangelical Christianity. What do you see that challenge is?
Oh, the challenge is you can't be a theistic evolutionist, someone who believes that God created the universe and natural laws, and it just kind of everything evolved from there based on the laws that he made. You cannot be a theistic evolutionist and be an evangelical Christian, because theistic evolutionists cannot believe that Adam is literal, that Genesis is historical, and yet all 11 chapters of the first 11 chapters of Genesis are mentioned in the New Testament as being historical. Six basic evangelical doctrines: the creation of man, the unity of man, the equality of men and women as creatures before God, the redemption of Christ, the fall of man. All of those doctrines are based on a literal Adam and literal Eve who literally fell and literally brought death in this world. So that if you're going to be a theistic evolutionist, you have to undermine a half a dozen basic evangelical doctrines.
I'm going to ask you a question that you may or may not wish to answer, and that's perfectly okay. But how do you see political, economic matters and its role for believers?
I see that Jesus said, be salt, be light, occupy till I come, do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith. The Bible is filled with commands for us to be in the world but not of the world, to speak to the culture without being of the culture itself. We are losing our freedoms because we are losing our Judeo-Christian basis for the freedoms in America. The founding fathers all, without exception, showed an inseparable unity between integrity and liberty, between the virtues and our freedoms. And now that we no longer have a Judeo-Christian basis for our country, we're realizing that we're losing all of our freedoms along with it. And our job is to speak to the culture and help reestablish our Judeo-Christian basis so that we have a basis for the freedom, or our freedoms are going to be swept away.
I had recently reread How Then Shall We Live by Dr. Francis Schaeffer. And one of the things that impressed me, and I know we're kind of off the subject of why you're here, but right, was someone who has seen as much and been around as much and has written as much, I would appreciate your point of view on this, because it's something I hold to. It's kind of evolving in my thoughts, so I'd appreciate your advice and counsel. He argues that the Reformation had a huge impact on governments, that the First and Second Great Awakenings in America's had a huge impact on government, and that when governments ascribe more to a Judeo-Christian, that those governments are more just, they follow the rule of law, and that without those spiritual influences, government would not do that.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. I knew Francis Schaeffer. Of course, I knew Noah, too. he was a great man. He was a prophet. He was a prophet to our day. He was way ahead of his time. His book, Christian Manifesto, really was a turning tide, 1981. In fact, I was a witness at the Arkansas Creation Evolution trial. I had read his book before the trial came up there, and he said if they rule against us, it's tyrannical and we should disobey government. He was very caught up in that, and he was basically right on his insights into culture and in morality and why Christians should get involved. I think he was right on.
You do a lot of co-authoring, like with Frank Turek on I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. Why do you do that?
Well, I know we wrote a book called Legislating Morality, too.
Also,
together,
right.
Together,
right.
Which, is it right to legislate morality? And the answer is yes, it is. It's biblical. It's constitutional. It's necessary. I do it because it's a discipleship thing with me. I want to pass it on. You know, I'll be 82 my next birthday, and I'm not going to last forever.
Well, you will, but not in the present form.
Not here, and I want to pass it on. And I've had the privilege of teaching hundreds of thousands of young men, and the ones who had real talent, I would take them with me. We'd do seminars, and he and I traveled together for maybe 10 years, and we wrote two books together because we saw the need, and I saw opportunity to get him involved and to be a voice, and he is.
Two real short questions, and then I know you're busy and we'll let you go. If President Obama walked in this room right now and said, I'd like your advice, what would you say?
Resign. The best thing you can do for America. Resign. You've blown it. We're losing our freedoms. You've destroyed the economy. You've destroyed our morality. You're destroying our democracy. Resign before you do any more damage.
And I'm going to say this for the benefit of the listeners, but David Barton has an organization called Wall Builders.
Yes.
And he retains or maintains a list that's called the most hostile president to religion America's ever had. And if you go over their website, he keeps them one after another. And it's amazing what little the media is reporting on what he's doing against freedom of religion.
When you have the secular media on your side, you can get away with murder. And He's their fair-eyed boy, and they protect him. And he can look at the American people and speak into a microphone and say the right thing and do exactly the opposite. I mean, I am an absolute addict to the news. I watch the news every day, day and night. Maybe I watch too much. But I know what's going on in the country. And I've been around the block a few times. And it's the greatest tragedy in my lifetime. I have never seen us go downhill farther and faster at any time period in my entire 82 years and the last 4 or 5 years.
I think in America, we've never seen anything like this. I'm 62, so I'm a couple years younger than you. But I remember the 1950s and what life was in America. If you didn't go to church, well, the last thing you should do is be mowing your lawn on Sunday morning because people say, what's wrong with you? But then the last question I have for you, a couple of our speakers struggled with an answer. And it's a very simple question. What is your favorite book outside of the Bible?
Summa Theologica by Thomas Aquinas.
We already had that one.
Yep. It's my favorite book. Thomas Aquinas was the greatest Christian thinker of all times. Mm-hmm. He only lived 49 years, died before his 50th birthday, started ministering when he was 30. And in 19 years, he wrote the equivalent of 120 books in 19 years. He could keep three secretaries going at the same time. He had no tape recorder. He had no microphones. He had no computer.
No iPad.
No iPad. He had no typewriter and no electric light bulbs and produced 120. And these are not easy tomes to read. These are books that are heavy, heavy reading. He's the greatest Christian thinker of all time.
Well, once again, I want to thank you personally because you've meant a lot to my life and your books, particularly when I was trying to understand what I believed. I read a number of your books, the Inerrancy book, as I mentioned. What is your latest book? I forgot to mention that.
Defending Inerrancy is one of our latest books.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's coming up again.
Great.
Reasons for Believe came out. That's putting it on junior high level so everyone can understand it. If God, Why Evil is another book that we just did recently. And we revised our original apologetics book, Christian Apologetics. This was written in like 1978, and it didn't die. I wrote three books that should have killed it. There were probably a dozen other books that should have killed it, and it just kept going. So the publisher said, revise it. And we just revised that completely. It's the book that Ravi Zacharias, he sat in my class when I was teaching the material for that book back in the 70s at Trinity, and he carried that book all over the world with him. He said he carries the Bible and Christian apologetics.
Well, once again, thank you so much for your ministry and God's work in your life, and you're a great man of God, and all the honors that you receive and the compliments are well-deserved. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, I hope to burn out for Jesus, not rust out.
There you go. All I want to do is live long enough to be a burden to my children. And my son sitting here says, I've lived that long. So again, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show. We hope you are enjoying this week's show. After a short break to hear from our sponsor, Ohio Christian University, we will rejoin our host, Dave Garrison, and this week's guest.
Does it seem like today's culture is racing towards the edge of a cliff? Choosing an educational institution is like choosing a winning race car. Ohio Christian is a values-driven university, preparing servant leaders to engage their world. Graduates excel in leadership. Just ask our 5-time New York Times bestselling author, Dr. John Maxwell. If you're looking to get on course, come enter the race with us. We're now enrolling for the fall semester, so enroll today at www.ohiochristian.edu or call 1-877-7-OCU now.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show, where faith and liberty meet. Now, back to the discussion with our host, Dave Garrison, and this week's wonderful guest.
We're real fortunate today to have Randy Galuza. And Dr. Galuza is a captivating speaker, and those who've heard him, I know, will agree. He presents a well-documented, often humorous scientific and biblical talks to audience of all ages, which he's doing here at the National Apologetics Conference. He's represented ICR in several scientific debates and in other forums. He has a Bachelor of Science in Engineering from the South Dakota School of Mines, a BA in Theology from Moody Bible Institute, an MD from the University of Minnesota, and a Master's in Public Health. You've had quite a career. And here at the conference, Dr. Galuza, your subject is Engineered Adaptability on Overdue Course Correction Intelligent Design Science, and Is There an Explanation for Earth Geology That Everyone Can Understand? Can you tell us just the basic principles that you're speaking on here at the conference?
On the first talk on engineered adaptability, this is to try to apply design principles as an explanation for how organisms fit into changing environments. So we want to look at how man-made things self-adjust to different environments, and we have a lot of design principles underlying that. We're going to ask the question, is it possible or could you explain the way organisms adapt by the same principles as the way man-made things adapt? In other words, are organisms really self-adjusting to their environments in order to fill different niches, or are they being shaped by the environment to fill the niches? See, the evolutionary worldview says that environments have been shaping organisms over a long period of time, and the credit for their great traits and great adaptability is actually credited to the environment. I think I'm going to make the argument that no, they're 100% intelligent designed, that they have capabilities and tremendous programming and also tremendous biological functions that give them innate capacities to reproduce variable heritable traits, enabling them to fit and fill environments.
That God put in them.
That's God put in them right from the very beginning, and not in order to survive initially, but in order to fill the earth, as he says, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth.
Could you give us a couple of examples of this?
Sure. There's a great one. You know, we all think about locusts, particularly in the Bible, these locust plagues. But you know, a locust is just like a regular grasshopper in many ways. Well, how do they morph into a locust? Well, this is actually kind of incredible. There's a little sensor on the back leg of a grasshopper, their big jumping leg, and it's a special little patch. And when that patch is touched by other locusts, in other words, there's way too many in one area, it gets overstimulated, there's a signal that is sent inside that locust, and the next time it molts, it has the wings of a locust, and it'll fly to a new environment, filling that, leaving fewer from the original environment, and so it's populating new areas, it's filling Earth, and this is 100% internally caused in that locus. I have lots of examples like that, but they're really fascinating to listen to.
That is fascinating. Well, I appreciate what you're saying and what you're doing here at the conference, and I've been watching the people. They just really appreciate godly men like yourself and learned men and educated men. What do you think is the most pressing issue in America right now? We've been asking a lot of the guests what's on their minds. I mean, like Josh McDowell said, he's so concerned about internet pornography, for instance.
Right. Well, I think for us, it's as a Christian, it's the loss of biblical authority. That would be the most pressing issue. You know, internet pornography, I think, is a symptom of that loss of biblical authority and the rise of secularism. It's all of those, but it's in the church, it's that the average guy in the pew many times is no longer placing the authority of the scriptures above man's thinking, but often is substituting man's thinking above the scripture. And when you put that man's thinking in there, you're kind of opening the door for all these other problems that are coming our way.
Yeah, it seems not that long ago that you and I, when we talked to somebody, we said, well, the Bible says, they go, oh, okay, the Bible says
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
But now it's totally irrelevant
totally
to them.
Totally irrelevant. And part of the reason why it's irrelevant in their thinking is many scientists have convinced a lot of people that the Bible is full of errors when it talks about origins. And because it's full of errors in those areas, it's lost its authority in the others. Our ministry is to say, no, a lot of those assertions are wrong, that the Bible really isn't full of errors in science.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your ministry and what you're doing and helping educate Christians and mixing it up there in the public arena. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Well, thank you so much.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show, where faith and liberty meet.
Ohio Christian University is one of the fastest-growing universities in the nation, offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs fully online in the areas of business, psychology, chemical dependency counseling, nursing, and ministry. You can earn an accredited, relevant, and affordable online degree all from the comfort of your home. Now is the time to prepare for your future and earn your degree with Ohio Christian University. Call today at 855-OCU-GRAD or online at ocuonline.com.
You are listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show, where faith and liberty meet. On behalf of our host, Dave Garrison, I'd like to thank you for listening to the Faith and Liberty Talk Show today. For additional information about the show, please go to faithandliberty.org, where you can access previous shows, like us on our Faith and Liberty Facebook page, and access other resources. Please keep in mind that the Faith and Liberty Talk Show exists only with the generosity and support of our listeners. If the show is of value to you, we would appreciate you visiting our website, faithandliberty.org, and donating to the show. The opinions and comments represent the views of our speakers and may or may not represent the views of Ohio Christian University. May God bless you, and thank you for listening to our show.